from the Emerson News Network. This is Legion of News.
Greetings and salutations to you good people of Portland. From high above the milk packing district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is even now readying a vast swath of happenings for you, including but not limited to the following.
Portland's police chief. Try this one
including, but not limited to, the following, which will not be transposed in any verbal way.
Portland's police chief explains why Al Gore's case has been reopened. Chiron Horman's family gives a press conference. And a local Baskin-Robbins is offering free ice cream for a year to a snitch.
Okay, then. As always, my friends, have no doubt that the conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed contained within the following hour will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent, quite possibly confused, than when the hour began. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
Portland Police Chief Mike Reese explained the Bureau's decision Thursday to reopen a case regarding a sexual assault allegation against former Vice President Al Gore. Reese said there were procedural issues when Portland masseuse Molly Haggerty contacted the Bureau in 2009 and asked detectives to take her statement about the 2006 incident. Portland police said they tried unsuccessfully to interview Haggerty several times after the allegation was first reported. In 2009, she read a prepared statement, and a detective asked follow-up questions, Reese said. At the time, the police bureau didn't contact Gore and didn't refer the case to a district attorney.
Now, is this the thing that we were playing the audio from? Is this the prepared statement that you're talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Let's see. I think we have just a little bit of this. So this is, for example, this is a skosh of her prepared statement.
He then forced an open-mouth kiss on me, who was cornered by him, sticking his tongue into my mouth to French kiss me. I pushed back and said, stop it, you're being
you
way
brute,
too frisky.
You vicious brute.
You're being frisky.
And then later on, she had this to say.
Well, I was trying to pack up. And then he wrapped me in an inescapable embrace as I turned around, giving me this come hither look deep into my eyes and caressed my back and buttocks and breasts.
Al Gore, come hither, boa constrictor.
When she says it, you know, he wrapped me in an inescapable embrace and gave me a come hither look. When she says it, it just seems like it's the cover of some romance novel by a woman named Blanche Lavender. Where there's Al Gore with sort of the rippling chest muscles and his shirt having been torn open, and meanwhile he's holding, you know, like a woman who owns a plantation or something, and sort of some...
There's a ship in the background and some palm trees or something.
Giving her what must be described as a punishing kiss.
Well, the National Enquirer reported Haggerty's version of events in an issue 2 weeks ago, and so police said that they then reviewed the case and determined that there should have been a decision made in 2009 at the command level on whether the investigation ought to go forward.
This is fantastic. Is the National Enquirer now actually dictating our law enforcement policy and behavior?
Yeah, I like that our local police went, damn it, the Enquirer got it. I guess we should have investigated it.
Damn it, boys, now we got to look into it. The Enquirer is on the case.
They had to pull some people off of the beaten up hippies and tasing guys on the max and bring them in to actually do some investigative work.
And let me just say this. Here's the thing about the Enquirer being the ones who are really the engine driving this case. I think that is well and good and proper and appropriate and fine. And that is America finally recognizing its own true nature. That is we've finally gotten over this this illusion of ourselves as some sort of paragon of morality and decency. We're just going to let the Enquirer run everything because that's who we are.
Former Multnomah County Sheriff's Captain Bruce McCain said allegations like the one made against Gore are difficult to prove 3.5 years after the incident. The district attorney really has to be confident here that they can prove any single part of that crime beyond a reasonable doubt, McCain said. Hagerty told the tabloid she has Gore's DNA saved on a pair of slacks, but McCain said the DNA, if true, could lead to charges. This is really the first example of actual forensic evidence possibly that would lead to a sex abuse third-degree charge, McCain said.
Is there anything in her story that indicates that he left the mail, the discharge of some kind on any of the clothing?
They just keep saying DNA.
That's my thing. And I wonder if maybe, now this is just my speculation, I don't really know, what is her name, Molly Hagerty?
He could have drooled on her. I mean, there could have been any number of things.
That's my thing. So I'm not saying that she's ill-educated or perhaps misunderstands what DNA is, or has based her entire assertion here on watching a lot of episodes of CSI, you know, Miami. But it seems to me that there is nowhere in the story, given any sort of scenario or scene, there's nowhere given any evidence that indicates that he would have left behind the DNA we're all sort of thinking slash hoping slash praying it is.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it's probably just like,
Of eyelashes.
Yeah.
That will only prove that he was in the room with her and, you know.
Which I don't think anybody's ever denied.
Yeah.
In fact, here's a question. Has he made any statement about this at all?
His family's people have said that they actually, spokeswoman for Gore's family, says that Gore denies the allegation and continues to stand by the denial. And there was actually a statement a couple of days ago.
Is he standing firm?
There was a statement a couple of days ago that they believe that any investigation into this will prove that it's, you know, nonsense.
All right. So there you go. Let's get just one more here. This is Molly Hagerty, who claims that she was ravaged by a sex-crazed Al Gore, who wrapped her in an inescapable embrace like some wild beast that walked like a man.
I was distressed, shocked, and terrified. He laughed, clearly enjoying himself at the expense of my discomfort, refusal, and fear. This was ever more disturbing and frightening to me as I saw he was determined to have a sexual act with me. At this time, he had been pressing his body up against mine, holding me tightly. And I was not certain if his robe was open or closed in the front. It seemed part way open, like the robes are small. He's rotund, you know. And I did not want to look down to see. I could feel what seemed to be an erection from him, lest he be further encouraged and aroused by seeing me look down. And I did not want to look anyway as he repulsed me.
That's fantastic. It's just a couple of final observations.
I was ever more disturbed by him. I felt what seemed to be an erection in his nether regions.
But Mr. Champlain, you know that I'm a taken woman. A couple of things. One, I don't even know where to begin. One, I suspect that this is the first time in Molly Hagerty's not quite so young life that she has ever used the word lest. Secondly, the way she describes him, it's sort of like he's a Vogon or something, where he just sort of takes this grim pleasure in her pain and suffering. You know, that's it. Cry for me, my precious.
No, please don't touch me, Mr. Gore. My pretty.
And that he's just sort of this Jabba the Hutt figure. It's just it's sitting there, you know, with that thing that Aaron Duran can name. I can't. The thing that's sitting on his shoulder and squawking and going, you know, while Leia sits there in a slave girl outfit. That's just my impression. That's an artist rendering. I don't know that it's an accurate depiction of how it. Somebody should totally create an artist rendering. Okay, you've heard this be created right here on Legion of News. This is copyright 2010. Somebody should completely create an artist recreation of the scene. They should do it like an artist rendering based on her story where he is Jabba and she's Leia.
I think so.
And then Nancy Grace
would be
the... Get
to work on that, listeners.
Nancy Grace would be the thing that goes...
A source told a local news team Thursday that missing 7-year-old Kyron Harmon's stepmother had lied to investigators after the boy's family Thursday pleaded for her cooperation in the case. Kyron's mother pleaded with the boy's stepmother, Terry Moulton Harmon, to tell police everything she knows about the boy's disappearance in a brief yet extremely emotional meeting with reporters on camera Thursday afternoon. Terry Moulton Harmon has told police since Kyron vanished on June 4th that she left him at school that morning and never saw him again. She is now being implored to fully investigate, cooperate with investigators. A reliable source told KGW News here in Portland that Terry was not cooperating with authorities and had refused to answer questions.
Now, do we know if anybody at... This is the sort of insidious thing about these stories, is that as much... I'm not going to say it's not an important story, but I'm saying in the grand scheme of human life, it's not like this impacts my existence one way or the other. But you see now why Murder, She Wrote ran for like 1,000 years, because I just find myself getting, you know, sucked into it and wanting to, you know, like wanting to get all Geraldo and just sit and, you know, and just, you know, and dissect all the minutia of the case. Do we know if somebody at the school saw the kid? Like, did he go to class?
I have no idea. This is the thing that bothers me about this whole turn of events, though, is I don't know. Obviously, we don't know why the stepmother and the father have, you know, broken up, have separated right now. It could just be a huge amount of stress over what's going on. But the thing is, you know, she was the last person to see the child. She said she took him to school, and then he vanished ostensibly from the school. So she is now obviously being targeted by police as a person of interest. We found it yesterday, she hired a defense attorney. Well, what's the first thing an attorney tells you to do?
Not talk.
To shut up.
Yeah.
And so... yeah, it may not be suspicious at all. It may just be because if you put yourself in her position, you know, if she's completely innocent, she dropped the kid off. Now suddenly the cops are going, oh, we got nothing, so we're going to look at you, ma'am, and keep questioning you over and over and seize your car and look for friends. And then you go, I better get a lawyer. You get a lawyer. The lawyer says, okay, stop talking to the police right now.
Right.
You know, she could be completely innocent, and it's just, you know, this is just how these things operate.
Oh, I have no illusion. I like to think that my many years of watching NYPD Blue and Oz have trained me for either being interrogated in the box and not giving anything up to the man, or should I be railroaded and falsely convicted of surviving in cell block 5 by learning how to shank a guy with a sharpened toothbrush. I do like to believe that if I were ever picked up by the cops or they ever hauled me and investigated me about anything, the first thing I would do is just say, well, I'm not going to say anything at all. And if it, you know, and just, I got to get a lawyer before I'm even going to open my mouth to tell you my name.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing they tell you to do, even if, and especially if you were innocent. It's probably less important for you to get a lawyer if you're guilty, because if they have enough to charge you on something, or if you are in fact guilty. Let's be honest. If you're guilty of a crime, you're probably not that bright to begin with. So the odds of your conviction, you know, are like exponentially higher. But if you're innocent, you have only things to lose and nothing to gain by talking.
But if you watch like Law & Order, any of the Law & Order shows at all, particularly SVU, the horrible abuse of power that the cops who are the heroes of this show inflict on witnesses and on suspects, and they will bring people in. They will slander people to, like, their neighbors and their family in the hopes of pinning something on them, and then find out later in the show, it wasn't him. And they just move on and never think twice about the fact they've screwed up somebody's life. And, of course, they always pull the card of, like, well, what would you need a lawyer for, sir, if you have nothing to hide? And whenever somebody doesn't want to talk to the cops on those shows, they immediately look like they're horribly guilty of something.
Right.
And it's all just a horrible propaganda, I think, to make us think that, you know, we shouldn't have lawyers if we're innocent, you know?
Wow, it's like you were just channeling Randy Rhodes there for a second. Okay, now talk in a shrill, unlikable voice and drone on and on until your listeners desert
you. Actually do have a little conspiracy thing that ties into this as well, part of the Harmon case, part of my next thing.
Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Further in the Kyron Harmon investigation, Oregon State Police are seeing an unprecedented demand for child ID kits. State Police Missing Children Program Manager Judy Hayes said interest in the free kits is the highest it has been in 11 years. In response to requests this week, Hayes says she sent child ID kits to people in Oregon, Virginia, Michigan, Arkansas, Florida, South Dakota, Rhode Island, and parts of Canada. The ID kits are literally flying out of our office, she said.
They've sprouted wings and they've gone off like a Harry Potter howler letter, yes, out the window, rushing through the sky on gossamer wings.
Hayes said, unclear on the meaning of the word literally. But it's great to know that they're going to the hands of people who can use them and want them. The kits include places for a photograph, medical information, personal information, DNA cheek swab sample, fingerprints, self-inking strip included, dental information, and physical description of each child.
Damn, it sucks to be a kid now. I will never be one of those people that just thinks everything was better in the past, because the past typically sucks. There's almost nothing that was better in the past than it is now. That's just a falsehood.
But well, here's my crazy conspiracy theory thing. Every time I hear about these child ID kits, okay, first thought in my mind is people are buying them because I think they somehow think this will help keep their child safe.
No.
Like the kid will go missing this will help find
this
him.
This is to identify your kid's body.
Right. This is to identify the body. Also, every time I read about there being like a huge run on these things, basically what you're doing is you're registering your child with the government so that in the future when they're an adult, government or agencies now already have their DNA, their fingerprints, and their dental prints on file.
I hadn't really thought about that. And
that's great for the authorities. That's great for police who just tell you, you need to do this to keep your kids safe.
See, and I think we have a problem here in terminology because what you describe as a conspiracy theory, I would just say is the government's natural tendency to try to get all the information they can on everybody who lives here. Like, I think conspiracy implies that that's somehow being hidden, that their goal is not clear or upfront.
I think their goal isn't clear or upfront. I think that these things are presented to parents who are scared into believing that their child are in danger of some guy jumping out from behind a mailbox at any moment and taking them. And they convince people that their children are constantly in danger of predators, which absolutely is not true. Something like over 99% of child kidnappings are done by non-custodial parents, according to the FBI. So your children are not in any more danger than they were when we were kids or when our parents were kids. We're just live in this atmosphere of fear where parents believe that their kids are, going to get snatched or raped at any moment. And they play on that by, telling them that, if you give us your kid's DNA and his fingerprints so we can have him on file, it'll keep him safe.
You are just a black rainbow today.
I'm sorry.
Just a beam of dim sunshine coming into your ears.
I started my day having to dispose of a dead bird that one of my neighbor's cats had dismembered on my front porch. So I think that just kind of put me in a mood.
Okay, then. She's Dawn Taylor, kids. This is Legion of News right here on PDX.FM. Don't forget, this program will be archived right here at PDX.FM later in the day. You can also get it on iTunes as of now, this instant. Legion of News now available on iTunes. You can also get it on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. We should note that coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show storms the airwaves, featuring Carl Click from K2. We will also be answering the magical pop culture question, what happened to Mike and Carol Brady's first spouses? That'll be on today's installment of Pop Culture Authority, counting down the top five television theme songs of all time in the opinion of one Carl Click. And we will have a taser watch, I believe, coming up later on today. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
When defending her highly criticized immigration law, Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona often lists the various problems, she says, that undocumented immigrants bring to her state. In an interview on Fox News last week, one of the things that she claimed apparently is going on in Arizona rampantly are beheadings. Here actually is the audio of that.
Are you actually, is your computer audio enabled over there?
My computer is audio enabled.
All right, go ahead.
So here is the audio of her speaking to Fox News.
Would you like me just to act it out with puppets?
It's a good bill, and it's another tool for us to be able to use in order to get our borders under control. We cannot afford all this illegal immigration and everything that comes with it, everything from the crime into the drugs and the kidnappings and the extortion and the beheadings and the fact that people can't feel safe in their communities. It's wrong.
Which beheadings in Arizona were you referring to?
Oh, our law enforcement agencies have found bodies in the desert, either buried or just lying out there, that have been beheaded.
We hear from politicians in the course of this debate on national news is a picture of Arizona that seems to be far from what many folks experience. I could not find any beheadings in any kind of news search in Arizona.
So that was actually, believe it or not, a Fox News anchor questioning a Republican governor's claim. The Arizona Guardian newspaper followed up, asked the state's county coroners, who examine all the bodies connected with crimes, if they had seen any headless bodies in the desert, and they said no. One coroner told the paper they did sometimes get human skulls, but not as the result of a fatal beheading. They're just found after people die in the desert and, quote, the animals get a hold of them and start moving their body parts around. As for a comment, a spokesman for Brewer told The Guardian that the governor had never said anyone was beheaded inside Arizona. I'm not aware of any statements where the governor specifies where any crimes were committed, he said. On the contrary, he claimed Brewer was talking about the fear that crimes that occur in Mexico could spread to Arizona.
I thought she might have been talking about it figuratively, like a beheading of the soul. A beheading of the human spirit that has defined this pioneer era. The best part about that story is it's how she sounds like Mom from Mom's Friendly Robot Company on Futurama. It's sort of a where she just has that kind of the back of the throat sort of Patty and Selma thing going on. What does she
look like? She looks kind of like Mom, actually.
Oh, she's evil.
Like a cross between Mom and Nancy Grace.
She looks like Cindy McCain. That's what she looks like.
Yes.
She has kind of a Skeletor thing where it's like somebody has made, like she's wearing a mask made of her own skin.
Yeah, she's got that pinched, angry, sour kind of face that mean women get sometimes.
Yeah, and you know she's one of those women that has no eyebrows and has to paint them on because she shaved them off at some point in her life and then realized they didn't come back. Also, I think somebody gets herself hooked up to a pneumatic pump every now and again and has a lot of herself extracted and put into a bucket. That's just I'm just guessing. I don't really know that that's true or not. This is my theory. All right, so beheadings. All right, well, there you go.
A black bear ran up a tree in Sisters, Oregon, before authorities could coax the animal down with cantaloupe and barbecue sauce, as more than 100 people watched. Craig Dirksen, a teacher from Singapore who's visiting Oregon, was sitting under a tree reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo when he heard someone scream, "Bear!" Sure enough, a black bear ran by him and up the tree. "He was headed straight toward me," Dirksen said. "Literally, he was running so fast, I realized I didn't have time to move, so I decided to stay still. He came within 10 feet of me and headed right up the tree I was sitting under. It was quite something."
All right, let me just stop for a second. I know that newspapers, there's a lot of cutbacks going on, and they're not really able to, you know, the copy editors and line editors are not really being replaced at the rate that they are leaving the industry. But it seems like we could try to have at least a passing relationship with grammar and proper use of the English language. And did I hear this correctly? Like in the first, I know I sound like I'm getting all strunk and white on everybody over here, but in the opening paragraph, did they actually stop down to identify what book he was reading?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Deschutes County Sheriff's deputies followed the bear as he lumbered through neighborhoods before heading out of town late Wednesday afternoon. Steve George, a wildlife biologist who led the effort to capture the animal, said it's likely the bear was kicked out of its own territory by a bigger, stronger bear and came into Sisters looking for a new home. He said the bear shares the same distinctive light coloration as a bear photographed last week at Camp Polk and is likely the same animal. George said animal control officers debated shooting the bear with a tranquilizer dart, but decided against it because bears tend to climb higher when they are struck by a dart, and this animal was already halfway up a 60-foot-tall tree. Authorities determined their net was insufficient to support a tranquilized bear falling out of a tree from that height. Captain Tim Edwards of the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office said there's no indication the bear is dangerous. "He's a pretty docile bear," Edwards said. "We think he was the one seen earlier in the week being chased by a deer, so he's not very ferocious."
I'm sorry. I was going to try to feign some sort of interest in this story, but really, once we got past the initial paragraph or two, it's just my brain just started playing the baby elephant walk, for a while there. So
there's a bear.
I am intrigued by the idea that they didn't think their net was sufficient to hold him, which makes me wonder if there's some sort of an organization, like a weights and measures department, that actually tests how many bears this net is weighted for.
And there had to be a whole conversation where they're standing around, "Well, we can dart him. Well, he'll fall into the net." I don't know if the net will hold. How about how much you think that bear weighs?
Let me ask you this. I am fascinated by the tranquilizer gun. The tranquilizer gun, for my money, is even more amusing and interesting than the taser. I wonder, for example, like when you shoot somebody with a tranquilizer gun or tranquilizer dart, first of all, how far away can you be from somebody and have that thing take effect? And how does it even work? By which I mean this. I understand how if you're going to sedate somebody in a hospital, you hit him with the hypodermic, and then you depress the plunger, and the plunger puts the sedative into their bloodstream, and then they become calm, and everything is on the mellow tip, as the people say. But with a tranquilizer gun, is this like one of those things in Indiana Jones where they have the curare-tipped darts or something? Because it's not like when you dart a guy, you can then walk over there and depress the plunger. It already has to be going through his bloodstream. So how does the tranquilizing agent get into the bloodstream off a dart?
I have always assumed that probably what happens is the force of it penetrating the body probably pushes the tip back in and then releases the... Because they look kind of like hypodermic syringe, you know, sort of things.
So you're thinking that it's some sort of Newtonian thing where the dart hits the body, the actual syringe portion comes to a rest, but then momentum, inertia, keeps the reservoir area moving forward.
So you see, here's some of them online. See, they look kind of like...
You can buy these online from the New Dart Company. And by the way, that's New Dart, P-N-E-U hyphen Dart. Would they sell those to me? I mean, or somebody who is legally distinct from but similar to me?
Sure, why not?
Would they sell me the gun and the poison that goes with them?
Probably.
Could I dart somebody with... What, I don't know.
I don't know what's involved with purchasing a tranquilizer dart gun.
We should do an entire program about amazing and dangerous weapons you didn't know you could buy legally. Like, here's the thing I wonder about. Can you just go online and just buy a crossbow off the internet? Will they sell you... Will they just send a crossbow to your home?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Because a crossbow, it seems, is as dangerous as, if not more lethal than, some handguns. All right. I'm going to make a note to myself. This weekend, I'm going to do some crossbow and tranquilizer gun shopping. Just FYI, so nobody come bother me. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
I believe we're going to move into a little science news.
It is time for another exciting installment of Legion of News is Science on the March.
Of course, have many, many people popping up now in the text box explaining exactly how tranquilizer darts work.
Well... Don't hold back, sister. Tell me. Give me the good word.
One says, the dart is hollow and has a weight in the back of it. When it impacts the beast, the weight slides forward, injecting the fluid. And it says, a dart hitting target triggers spring-loaded cartridge.
These can't all be true.
Someone else says, crossbows, longbow, and black powder guns can all be purchased online. Our listeners seem to know an awful lot about weaponry.
Yes. Yes, they do. All right. Okay. Well, I'll have to find some sort of definitive answer on this later on. Here's Don Taylor with Science on the March.
Next time your brain plays tricks on you, you have an excuse. According to new research published June 30th in the journal Nature, the brain is intrinsically unreliable. A longstanding hypothesis is that the brain's circuitry is actually reliable, and the apparently high variability is because your brain is engaged in many tasks simultaneously, which affect the other. Researchers, taking inspiration from the celebrated butterfly effect, in which the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil supposedly sets off a tornado in Texas, they decided to introduce a small perturbation, which I would imagine is when you're perturbed.
To be perturbed.
Something to make you perturbed about, into the brain, the neural equivalent of butterfly wings, and then look at what would happen to the activity in the circuitry. Would the perturbation grow and have a knock-on effect, thus affecting the rest of the brain? Or would it just die out on its own? It turned out to have a huge knock-on effect.
When you say a perturbative effect, is this like when a guy cuts you off in traffic or something, or it's like they tell you that they've got Top Ramen 10 for a dollar, and you get there and they've only got Ramen Chan, which is the sort of knockoff?
I don't know. It could be any of a number of things. They could have said, "Hey, you're ugly," or they could have like made you smell something unpleasant, or you know. Explain to you that, you know, if a robot, the rules of robot behavior and kind of made you short circuit.
You're out on the most thin ice in your own head. I can tell you have no idea where this analogy is going. So they basically just got a bunch of people in a laboratory and it did horrible things to them to try to get their brains to go off kilter.
Upset them somehow.
All right, okay.
You know. Perturbation was a single extra spike or nerve impulse that was introduced. Oh, here's what happened. It was rats. It wasn't people. They added a nerve impulse to a single neuron in the brain of a rat. That single extra spike caused about 30 new extra spikes in nearby neurons in the brain, most of which caused another 30 extra spikes and so on. This may not seem like much, given that the brain produces millions of spikes every second, but researchers estimated that eventually that one extra spike would affect millions of neurons in the brain. The result indicates that the variability we see in the brain may actually be due to noise and represents a fundamental feature of normal brain function. The rapid amplification of spikes means that the brain is extremely noisy, much, much noisier than computers. Nevertheless, the brain can still perform very complicated tasks with enormous speed and accuracy, far faster and more accurately than the most powerful computer ever built.
The best part is how you actually couldn't say that sentence correctly.
Yeah, I know. because my brain is
brain perturbed. Fast. Me no talk pretty. Story be explicable later.
So anyway, the researchers suggest that for the brain to perform so well in the face of high levels of noise, it must be using a strategy called a rate code, in which neurons consider the activity of an ensemble of many neurons and ignore the individual variability or noise produced by each of them.
I feel like I may have gotten a misfit brain then. I think I showed up late at the factory because this story itself has just left me completely flummoxed. I have no idea what's going on here. But I will say this. One of the things, this is what my wife would call a stoned observation, by which I mean it is not necessarily a thing that she arrived at. She's a clean liver. But it's, it's one of those things that you would think about like in your dorm room late at night after you dropped a bunch of acid or something and you're staring at your Jim Morrison poster and saying, my God, it's all so clear to me now. We are but crumbs in the cookie jar on the table of the giant of life. It's one of those things where you think about your ability to form sentences on the fly, as I am doing now. Mm. And you realize that, by all rights, that just should be impossible. It shouldn't even be a thing you're capable of doing. Your brain is simultaneously rooting through a dictionary, a thesaurus, and a style guide all at once, often without any sort of idea what you're actually about to say. And then by the time it comes out of your mouth, it is, as I think everybody can tell, flawless. So, really, your brain ought not be able to do that. That requires parallel processing of just such a Gaussian magnitude that it can't even be comprehended.
Well, we talked about this after we first started the show last week, and you pointed out that when I was hitting a rough patch, if I mispronounced something, I would just stop dead and then do this weird little shaking motion
my
head.
No, you do this. I'm sorry. Please forgive me for this analogy, but you do this thing similar to a dog. but you know the dog when it gets wet and it kind of shakes off the water? You do this thing whenever you are reading a story, and if you hit a word that you don't pronounce correctly, I don't know, you can't pronounce it, but you mangle it somehow, which I do all the time because I'm a terrible out loud reader. If you hit a word and you get it wrong the first time, you'll just sort of back up. And then you'll take another run at it like a Roomba. But if you mangle it a second time, in other words, if you fail to pronounce the word or get the word out of your mouth correctly the second time, you actually will stop down altogether where you were, and you would kind of do this, yeah, and sort of, and just as though you are trying to...
I am a cartoon character.
Be gone from my body, and just sort of leave this mortal coil, the false pronunciation, and trying to expel it out your fingertips. And it's this sort of all over shake that ends in what I can only describe as the Palpatine pose, where you are, putting the lightning bolts, unlimited power, and then there's bolts coming out of the end of your fingers, as though that the word is like meant to escape out of your fingernails. I don't mean to make you sound crazy just now.
But that was the thing, is that we talked about this, and I said, well, it is a weird situation where, I'm simultaneously thinking about talking. Think I'm reading ahead kind of on some level to see where this is going to go next, and it's like the brain is doing like four different things in four sort of almost different time frames. And then I like hit, it's like slamming into a wall when I mispronounce the word. It just shuts the whole smooth process down. It's like, damn it.
And do you ever do this? Do you ever just have days where you're buttering your toast or something in the kitchen, and and somebody breaks a glass or there's a loud noise of some kind? And I know that when there's a loud noise or there's a certain, a burst of sort of, and it just, and you get an adrenaline flood momentarily. You get the fight or flight syndrome because your body thinks, oh my God, it's some sort of space alien come to probe me.
Bear.
But then for the rest of the day, sometimes you will just be completely off your game. And the thing is, that is the absolute embodiment of the story because the adrenaline surges over almost immediately, and then the adrenaline itself leaves your system within like 10 to 12 minutes, I think.
But it is having this butterfly effect on all of your neurons.
Yeah, so if it's some guy who just fires an air horn in your kitchen window while you're trying to, make your morning juice or something, the whole rest of your day you're just walking around kind of going, and just sort of thrown off, which is bizarre.
Or if you go outside your front door and have to call your dog off of
a
disemboweled bird that is nothing but like two wings, a head and sinew, and then and then pick it up by the tip of the wing and carry it to the trash, it does kind of throw the rest of your day off.
All right, then. Is this since it is just one of those days, it's a Friday, I can just sense it in the air. Sometimes, and this is the thing, that the longer you do this program, now you have a fair amount of broadcast experience, but the longer you do, I think, this program and then the Rick Emerson Show, there's a phenomenon that I have noticed over the years. You can just sense in the air when the people in general, not just you, not just me, not just us in the audience, when everybody, it's just one of those days when the crazy is in the air. And some days,
it's not so much crazy, it is just sort of a disconnected kind of whimsy that is floating through the ether. Today is one of those days where everybody's a little bit mentally untethered. Did your dog bring you this dead bird, do you think, as a gift?
No,
sort of
the dog
look
had,
what I got you.
The dog really had nothing to do with it. The dog just, I live in an apartment complex, and I live downstairs, and you exit out underneath the stairs, and then there's a little rise where there's like bark dust and trees and things right at the end of my walkway. And the dog was like, oh, woohoo, I'm excited. This is the best thing ever. It's Christmas. And it was, there was just this explosion of feathers and the
wow.
remains of this bird. My upstairs neighbors have two cats, and there's a lot of cats in the complex.
See.
And so obviously one of the local cats had had some sort of a bird field day. And this thing was laying there, and I asked my husband to get rid of it. He goes, I'm not touching it. I'm going, well, somebody has, well, you do it, he says to me. I can't pick it up. I'm like, yes, you can. And I picked it up by the edge of the wing, and I said, see? And it was all dangly and gross. And he goes, you're not getting all of it. There's a foot.
This is really a news program in only the most tenuous sense sometimes. I mean, really, just even by the most elastic of definitions.
So that's what happened. That was the bird story.
I got a thing about a dead bird that I won't tell you now. I'll tell you next hour, though. Because
okay.
If I do it now, it's going to be, you know what it is? It's going to be as to this show as the air horn is to your brain patterns. And the rest of the 22 minutes that we're here today for the people of Portland is going to be all thrown off kilter. They're going to be sullen and besmirched. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Well, we are done with the science news, and we will move on to a judge accepted William Wesley Tom's plea of no contest in the invasion of privacy charge brought against him by a woman who spent the night at his home after a company Christmas party. Prosecutor Don Rees said the victim and Tom's wife worked together at a medical clinic. The clinic paid for a catered dinner and an open bar party in Vancouver. The victim, Tom's, and his wife went to the Horse Brass Pub to get some drinks before the three of them went to Tom's house. According to court documents, the victim told police she'd had too much to drink at the 2009 Christmas party and didn't want to drive home drunk. The woman, who was a friend of Tom's and his wife, told investigators she woke up in the living room naked. The woman said Tom's was taking photos of her, and she also accused him of rape.
It seems like maybe you put the rape part up front.
I would think so. But according to an affidavit filed with the court, Tom's told her in a recorded phone call a day later that he was sorry and considered her like a sister to him.
A sexy sister. A sexy sister that just had an unholy appeal for him that despite his best efforts, he could not resist, allegedly.
The 45-year-old Gresham resident was charged with first-degree rape, sodomy, and invasion of privacy, but Wednesday, Multnomah County Circuit Judge Julie France dismissed the rape and sodomy charges after Rees said the evidence was conflicting and no naked photos of the woman were found. Tom's pleaded no contest to invasion of privacy and coercion.
I don't understand this. So he pled guilty to the invasion of privacy and the coercion. But if there was no, what do you call it, raping, into what did he coerce her? Playing pinochle?
Being naked, maybe?
So she admits to being naked, and then she admits to being hosed out of her brain, you know, being all drunk. It was a, boy, I wonder
he's
what...
He's a pleasant-looking guy, too.
I wonder, I wonder what percentage... of stories like this originate at some sort of holiday Christmas party, you know, or an office gathering of some kind. He looks displeased. I'm assuming this is his mugshot. He doesn't look happy about being booked and arrested. Some guys, you know, you can tell they're embracing it with a sort of life-loving zeal, sort of a zest, kind of a, this is my existence, this is who I am. He seems decidedly unhappy about the entire thing. They worked at a medical clinic together. Okay, so she says that she was drunk, didn't want to drive home, woke up in the living room naked. They do phrase this very oddly, where they say, taking photos of her. Also, he raped me. But the photos. I'm sorry. I wonder if there was a record. Did they have the recorded voicemail that he allegedly left for her? No, apparently not. All right, well, there you go. So apparently he coerced her into something and violated her privacy in some way that we, the public, are being punished by not being privy to the details of.
But they couldn't prove rape, and they didn't have any of the photos, so they couldn't prove that. But apparently he admitted to enough, or they proved enough, that he's still in trouble.
So the key is hide the photos.
Exactly.
Theoretically. I mean, not for this guy, because he clearly didn't take any. But if you were this guy and had taken photos, the answer is just to stash them somewhere.
That's right.
All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
It is now time for entertainment.
Here is your entertainment news for Friday on Legion of News.
Civil rights activists are strongly condemning actor and director Mel Gibson's alleged use of the N-word during a recorded argument with the mother of his child, publicized by two tabloid media websites. Earl Ofari Hutchinson, president of the Los Angeles Urban Policy Institute, is calling for a boycott of Gibson's movies, while the Southern Christian Leadership Conference California said that Gibson has shown a pattern of racism and sexism in prior remarks. Reverend Eric P. Lee, president of the California branch of SCLC, said Gibson's statements are sexist and racist. Quote, he has shown patterns of racism, sexism, and anti-Semitism because this is not the first time he's been publicly heard making extremely offensive comments about other races and now about other women.
Now, here's the thing about this story. When I first read the headline, it said Gibson racist rant. This gives all the evidence we need to his peculiar character. When the headline said Gibson racist rant may be caught on tape, I hadn't read the rest of the article yet. I immediately thought they were talking about that traffic stop some years back where he was screaming at the cop about, you know, are you a Jew? You look like a Jew.
And then he called one of the female cops sugar tits or something when he got to the thing.
No need to use crudities.
This is all being shared in the purpose of journalism.
I know that this is, we are operating in for and by the public interest, convenience, and necessity, but...
I said N-word earlier. So
yeah, it's because we're all five. The thing about this story is that, on the one hand, it just kind of confirms, you know, what we already sort of knew or suspected about him. On the other hand, does your brain do that thing of making the mental division where when you think about, like Lethal Weapon, you think about, what's his name, Riggs? Or is he Murtaugh?
Yeah,
I can never
tell.
He's Riggs. When you think about him, my brain just somehow doesn't conjure up that they're the same person. Or when I think about William Wallace and Braveheart, I think I've got some sort of self-defense mechanism built into the entertainment enjoyment center of my cerebral cortex, where when I read about a story with Mel Gibson, immediately a partition goes up inside my head that will then still allow me to watch like Payback or something without picturing him just like giving a cop a good groping and talking about how Mexicans are evil.
On the one hand I'm able to look at pretty much any actor in a role and not really think too much about them as a human being, because otherwise if you do that then you'd never be able to listen to a Sinatra record again. A lot of these people are just bastards in real life. But on the other hand, I haven't really enjoyed much of Mel Gibson for a long time.
What is the last Mel Gibson film you really enjoyed?
I have no idea.
Did you like Payback?
Yeah, it was okay.
I was a big fan of Payback. You know what I'm not a fan of? You know one of the worst movies I have ever seen in my entire life? At the time, I said that it was the worst major motion picture release that I had seen in the theater in my life. In other words... It's not like it's Can't Stop the Music or something, but it was the worst movie that I had gone to the theater and paid money to see at the time, and that was Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts. I just sat there, and I could just hear the chortling as the sodomizing hand of the studio reached into my pocket and other areas and extracted an amount of money from me to see that film.
That was a terrible movie, and yet I enjoyed it on the level that I'm a big fan of conspiracy theory stuff, and I liked the way... I was enjoying the way they managed to kind of try and shoehorn all of them into the script. Oh, Catcher in the Rye and Black Helicopters. It's like they were just throwing all of the stuff at the screen and just jamming it into a plot in this almost incomprehensible way, but just the effort kind of amused me. But the thing about Gibson is that I, of course, was forced to see both Passion of the Christ and Apocalyptica in a professional capacity. And after seeing both of those films, I have no problem connecting the crazy racist Mel Gibson to his body of work. No problem at all.
It's all become so clear to you in retrospect.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's nuts. Completely crazy.
Was he in that movie 15 Minutes? Was that him? Robert De Niro was in that. But was it Robert De Niro, Mel Gibson, or was it just Robert De Niro?
I don't think I ever saw that, so I don't
know. I remember watching at the Mission Theater and about halfway through thinking, if I leave right now, I could probably get the monologue for Conan. It's going to be traffic. I want to stop at Taco Bell. I guess I'll just stay here. And that was, I think, right after I got my first smartphone. 15 Minutes by Mel Gibson, with Robert De Niro, and I believe Mel Gibson, but at the very least it was De Niro. That was one of the first movies where I remember actually taking out my phone and checking my email during the movie, just because I'd realized that it was not going to get any better. We had reached some event horizon where the suck was never, ever, ever going to turn on.
IMDb does not list Mel Gibson in that movie. We got Robert De Niro, Edward Burns, Kelsey Grammer, Avery Brooks.
That's right. Okay, no, Edward Burns, I remember that. All right. Boy, talk about a guy that... Never mind. I'm not going to talk about Ed Burns because why? Why would you? Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Futurama's June 24th return to the small screen garnered record ratings for Comedy Central.
Bam!
According to the network, the animated show attracted 2.9 million viewers total, making it the highest rated and most watched animated series premiere, with the exception of South Park, for Comedy Central.
Fantastic.
The series was also Thursday's highest rated show among men 18 to 34.
I got last night's episode waiting for me at home. I have not yet viewed it, but that is going to be the first thing I do when I arrive at my domicile this afternoon.
Despite our announcement yesterday about Josh Hutcherson, we have a new Spider-Man, and it is Andrew Garfield, 26, who is nabbed the highly sought-after role of Peter Parker after a worldwide search. Largely unknown in the States, Garfield is one of the UK's most highly regarded up-and-coming actors. He appeared in Terry Gilliam's The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, as well as John Crowley's Boy A, for which he received a Best Actor BAFTA Award in 2008. This year, he'll be starring opposite Jesse Eisenberg and Justin Timberlake in David Fincher's Facebook movie, Social Network.
Oh, man, I am all over that movie. You have no idea the extent to which I am all over that
film.
They
just announced that Trent Reznor is going to be doing the music for it.
Really?
You've
seen the trailer, haven't you?
Yes.
Oh, man, the trailer's awesome. I'm trying to figure out where I've seen this guy from, because
he has big Robert Pattinson hair.
He does, too. No, you know, he has what I believe... what I believe Evil Buffy referred to as having, you have pointy hair that goes up, she said to Angel at one point. And he has that as well, but it's like it's become with every year, though, the guys who have the upward-pointing angel hair, it just becomes more and more immense.
Yeah, bigger and puffier and goofier.
Yeah, no, the hair can't be controlled at all.
You can't really tell from this picture, but doesn't it look like his face is just a little bit too small for his head?
It looks as though his head has stayed the same size, but like Tila Tequila, someone has hit a shrinking ray, like just on the face part,
yeah.
And it's gone down. It's sort of the opposite of the mouth of Sauron, where everything is 20% too large. It's sort of it's the mouth of a Manchichi, where everything is about 20% too small.
There's a guy on a local TV ad. He's a lawyer, I believe. He does his own ads, who is like that, where he has this big round face, and the actual facial features, the eyes, the nose, and the mouth, are like put together for a much smaller face than his head actually is, and it is the creepiest, scariest thing.
Looks like you got to be staring in the window on the wing of your plane.
Yeah, I would. He might be a great lawyer, but I would never hire him because it would freak me out too much to look at him.
Sure, you'd just be sitting at the defense table. Well, do you think we should move to? Ah, Jesus! I'm sorry, Bob. I keep forgetting. This guy was in Lions for Lambs. That's where I know him from. This Andrew Garfield guy, who I guess is the new he's the new Spider-Man.
He is the new Peter Parker. They told him yesterday afternoon, and apparently it hit the wires.
Do you suppose it's one of those things where it's like the NBA draft or something, where you just where you're just sitting at home staring at the phone, going, I don't know, it's almost 4. They're gonna call. I mean, it's gonna be. Have they called anybody else? All right. Well, I'm going to stay here. Just give me some Evian or something. I want to leave the phone. Hold on. No, I'm just going to wait. No, that was a lawnmower. I thought it was the phone.
Like, he probably has people for that, but it's the same thing. Like, he goes about his day, and the whole day he just keeps picking up his iPhone and looking at it. Damn it, why aren't they calling me?
Doing that thing that I always do whenever I'm unemployed, where I will actually call my own phone sometimes to make sure the ringer still works. I don't know. People, when I had a radio show, people called me all the time. It's been days, and no one has gotten a hold of me. It must be something with Verizon. All right. Hey, just so I can be clear on this, because you know I hate to use improper grammar or punctuation if these things can be avoided. Is Spider-Man hyphenated?
Yes.
It is.
It's two words with a hyphen.
All right. So it's not Spider-Man all one word run together.
No.
And it's not the Spider-Man.
It's Spider-Man.
All right. Okay. All right. Got it. Fantastic.
Lilith Fair comes tonight to the Sleep Country Amphitheater, formerly the Clark County Amphitheater in Washington. Organizers of the 2010 Lilith Fair, initially one of the most anticipated tours of the summer.
Initially went in what summer? Initially?
I have no idea. Have announced the cancellation of 10 dates on the tour. Salt Lake City, Montreal, Raleigh, Charlotte, West Palm Beach, Tampa, Birmingham, Austin, Houston, and Dallas. The cancellations come on the back of previously announced pulled shows in Nashville and Phoenix, and in the wake of artists like Norah Jones and Kelly Clarkson bailing on the tour.
Kelly Clarkson was at Lilith Fair?
She was supposed to be part of Lilith Fair.
Wow.
Meanwhile, the shows that are going on are suffering from embarrassingly low attendance and being moved to venues half the size of their original stops.
That's almost surprising. I can't believe what I'm hearing.
In a just-released cancellation announcement, Lilith co-founder Terry McBride said, We are in the midst of one of the most challenging summer concert seasons, with many tours being canceled outright. Everyone involved with the tour would like to apologize to the fans and artists scheduled to play in these markets and express appreciation, blah, 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 blah. Refunds are being offered. Fans are encouraged to check the website to find out how the canceled shows may affect the artist lineups in their town. But meanwhile, people are asking, why? How could this possibly happen? And
are they really? I myself was asking, if by why and how could this happen, do you mean why did this tour come back and how could it happen that somebody thought it would make money? Then I am one of those people.
Well, when I was reading the story and printing it out, by the way, the lineup includes Sugarland, Sheryl Crow.
Oh, no, we got to take this one at a time. This was my next question. Is who is playing at Lilith Fair this year?
Yes.
And I was going to guess, but see, now that particular joy has been taken away from me. But okay, Sugarland.
Uh-huh.
And you know Sugarland. Sugarland did that terrible, terrible country music cover of Life in a Northern Town by the Dream Academy. Have you heard it?
No.
We'll play it next hour, and you will be shocked and horrified by how bad it is.
Oh, okay.
All right, I got to write that down. Sugarland.
Yeah. Sheryl Crow, Erykah Badu.
Really?
And Colby Calais.
I have no idea who that is.
I don't either. I had to actually look up how to pronounce her name.
Colby Calais sounds like some guy you would know, where his brothers are Skylar and Cody.
Or like a type of cheese. But yes, when I was looking at the story, they finished the story out, of course, because many online outlets, they want to encourage people to comment because it raises their hit rate and
uh-huh.
they can charge more for advertising. So they end with a question like, why do you think this happened? You know, Sarah McLachlan told Entertainment Weekly she thought this summer's Lilith Fair was less of a need and more of a want. So how come people don't really want it? And the first two comments out of the gate, somebody pointed out, first of all, well, how about the fact that nobody knew it was coming?
Yeah, I
have
no
you
idea.
Seen any advertising for this at all?
I thought you just picked up a news pile from 1992.
No, and it's tonight here in town. You know, at the Clark County Amphitheater.
The funny thing is, I think you probably said that at the top of the story about 2 minutes ago, but I've already forgotten it. It's fallen out of my brain.
And the other idea that somebody floated was the fact that tickets, for example,
are $75.
Here at Clark County Amphitheater here in town, they run from the lowest lawn seats are $30, and the highest price tickets are $275.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. You'll have to... You're going to have to pack up your synchronized menstrual cycles and go home.
So again, to recap, didn't know it was coming.
Jesus.
Way too expensive. Nobody you actually want to hear play music.
Wow. But Don Taylor, wherever shall I go to buy a dream catcher and perhaps a crystal that I can hang from my rear view mirror next to a, never mind. I was just going to make a cheap joke about bumper stickers, but it's beneath me. It's not even really beneath me. It's just that I don't even care enough to spare the effort. The energy is just not going to be expended by me on that joke at this particular time. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show will feature Mr. Carl Click from K2. He will be in the studio with us. We'll be counting down Carl Click's top 5 favorite television theme songs of all time. Speaking of television, we'll also have a television-based installment of Pop Culture Authority. We will answer the question, what happened to Mike and Carol Brady's first spouses? That'll be answered today. And we do have a bit of an announcement. There was somebody who actually logged into the text box earlier, and their login name was, the chat name they gave themselves was, called in sick to work for the big announcement. So let me just tell you right now, sir, madam, that was a bad choice on your part. That's something you should not have done. But, I guess you can't cry over, it's water under the bridge and all that. So, anyway, we'll have an announcement coming up next hour. I would say it's a solid 5.5 on the excitement scale. Here is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
You may already know this, but last month was Portland's wettest June in nearly 7 decades. C. Pierce, vice president of the Oregon chapter of the American Meteorological Society, I kind of rolled in on that one. Says the month, known affectionately as January, logged a soggy 4.27 inches of rain, which is more than any other June on record between 1941 and 2010.
This is like the first year that I moved here, and I came here from San Diego. And I was trying to convince my wife that it wasn't, the worst place on earth, because we'd been living, right near the beach, and it was beautiful and gorgeous. And the first thing she did, she'd never been to Portland, and she went online to one of the webcams of the day, and this would have been like 98. So, your webcam choices were somewhat finite. And the first thing she saw, first of all, it was raining, of course, because it's November. And it's a webcam that just looks straight into the heart of St. John's. And it was just like, and it was just like a belching smokestack and just muggings or something, you know. But then, and everybody was wet and wearing flannel and stinking. And she said, "Why are you taking me to this place?" And I said, "That's baby, it's because you're being punished." And then we came in. It rained every day for 89 days. So that's what this June reminded me of.
Well, 95% of the month's rain fell in the first 15 days of June. So that was a lot. It was also colder than usual. Meanwhile, this coming week, showers are likely this morning. If you look outside your window, you'll probably
it's see 1
them.
P.m.
Shut up. Shut up.
Okay.
It wasn't when I printed this out.
Okay.
It was like 7 a.m. when I printed this out.
No, I'm just kidding.
The Metro says that in the Metro area... This makes no sense.
Let me ask about your relationship with words today.
I don't know.
If
words are winning today.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a battle that is demonstrably one-sided on this Friday. Should we bring a curtain down on this whole sorry affair?
No, because I need to say this.
Would you like me to read it for you in my warm yet crisp timbre?
I have got this.
Okay.
The chance for rain will end tonight, making way for a dry holiday weekend, although showers might be possible later today and this evening. But the rest of the weekend is supposed to be dry. However, it's supposed to still be kind of gloomy. So if your 4th of July plans are kind of... I'm going to just stop this right now. I am just pulling the cord, pulling the plug on this entire weather thing right now. I quit. I just that's it. No more. I'm done. You know what the thing is? Never read the weather. That's what I've just learned. Don't read the weather.
Yeah, I was going to weigh in on that, but now it seems like that's a lesson that you have taught yourself.
I had a whole weather thing that this was leading into. I was going to be clever. It's not working.
What I will say is it's interesting to me that in the wrap-up of that story that they noted that, well, one thing that is false and another thing that is contradictory, they noted that the chance for rain will end today. And that's just not true. That's just a factual falsehood. There is in no way will the chance of rain end today. That's just scientifically inaccurate. The second thing... then there will remain a chance of rain throughout the night. There's always a chance. There's a chance of rain on the sun.
And it also tripped me up because what they wrote here, what I was reading, doesn't make any sense. It said, the Metro rain chance will end tonight, making way for a dry holiday weekend. And immediately after that, it says, showers will be possible later today and this evening, but it is possible any showers will be widely scattered. So they say...
I think there's some wiggle room being written into this article. That's kind of my take on it right here. All right. This has been another exciting week of... whatever you do, don't go home and stare at a wall while drinking heavily, replaying this last segment over and over again in your head, wondering if you'll ever again regain the power of fluid speech, such as I am demonstrating right now with flawless and mellifluous execution. Okay. Legion of News will be archived so you can hear this over and over and over again today at... PDX.FM and a little bit later on at LegionofNews.com. Don't forget, Legion of News is also on iTunes, friends and neighbors. You can get it on the iTunes right now, as a matter of fact. The Rick Emerson Show is next at RickEmerson.com. RickEmerson.com featuring Carl Click from K2 today. Top 5 TV theme songs of all time. Pop culture authority answering the question, what happened to Mike and Carol Brady's first spouses? And a conglomeration of other amusements for you. Thank you for listening to another week of Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, we thank you for being out there. Our advanced technology and magic made possible by Mr. Thomas Gill. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Until next time, thank you for listening to another exciting installment of
Legion of News.